Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM. Let's create.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. Hey everybody, happy Saturday! Coming up next week on the show, we are going to talk about a famous concert pianist. And making an appearance in that episode, brief but important, is Franz Liszt.
So it seemed like a great time to revisit one of our favorite past episodes about some 19th century fandom, and that is Liszt-omania. Just a quick note, if this episode sounds a little different to you from how our episodes have been sounding, it's just from an earlier era that was recorded and produced at a slightly different quality level. Enjoy!
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Tracy B. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
I have a confession to make of a long-holding jealousy. It's been with me quite a while. I have always been jealous of Sarah and Dublina, having already covered the Rite of Spring riots on our podcast. The whole story is just so weird. They already covered it back in 2011, so I've had my eye out for some other kind of weird musical story to cover as like a sad consolation prize. This is not a sad consolation prize. This is actually awesome. It is about a musical mass hysteria that is from the mid 19th century, and that is Liszt-omania.
Yeah. It's delightful. I mean, there's no way around it.
I feel kind of sorry for the guy, but at the same time, it's pretty great. So, before we start, as often happens, I need a little note. So today the word mania definitely has psychological connotations, right? It's used to describe this excessively elevated mood or really hyperactive mental state, and that can also extend into like physical hyperactivity and other behaviors. And usually it's used this way in the context of like bipolar disorder, other mental and emotional disorders. And there are definitely folks who would really prefer that the word mania not be used to describe more generally just being really excited or busy. But at the time when the word Liszt-omania was coined, the word mania was really a physical description. It was not a psychological one. And so Liszt-omania was considered to be a frantic and dangerous physiological response to being around Franz Liszt. And so when we use the word mania in today's show, that is the context that we are talking about.
All I can think of is all those shots of the women in the crowd as the Beatles landed in America, because it's very similar.
Well, and to be honest, I saw the Boston Symphony, the Boston Pops specifically, do a whole night of the Beatles, and it was amazing. I was really there to see John Hodgman do the introduction to orchestra for young people.
Oh yeah,
if that, yeah, it was hilarious. And there was narration through the whole thing that talked about, among other things, Beatlemania. And I had this moment where I was like, what if we did a podcast on Beatlemania? And then I couldn't figure out a way to make that feel legitimate. So this feels a lot more legitimate and also very fun.
So to give you a little bit of background and set this up, Franz Liszt was born in Dvorian, Hungary, which is now Rating, Austria, although it is still referred to as Dvorian if you speak Hungarian, on October 22nd of 1811. And Dvorian at the time was rather small. It was basically a market town, and most of the people who lived there were both German-speaking and ethnically Hungarian, or Magyar.
Liszt was the only child of Adam Liszt and Anna Maria Lager. Adam Liszt worked as a clerk for Prince Nicholas Esterhazy, who was a musical patron. And Liszt's father was also an amateur musician who could play several different instruments, including the cello and the piano. Franz Liszt's father had also spent 2 years in the Franciscan order, so Franz grew into a religiously pretty devoted child.
Liszt already showed a really distinct love of music by the age of 6, and his father started to give him music lessons. Franz was just enormously talented, and he really progressed in his musical study extremely quickly. By the time he was 9, he was giving public performances as a concert pianist. And after his first performance, local bigwigs actually donated money to fund the next several years of his musical education.
Soon, his prodigious ability outstripped the resources that were available in Dvorian. So Liszt's father asked for an extended leave of absence from his employer and took Franz to Vienna. There, he studied piano with Karl Czerny, who himself had studied with Ludwig von Beethoven. Liszt also studied composition with Antonio Salieri, who was much more famous for his relationship with and rivalry with Mozart. Both of these two teachers were so impressed with Liszt's talent that they refused to be paid for their work with him.
Franz's first public performance in Vienna was in 1822, so he would have been about 11 years old at this time. And he was described as, quote, a little Hercules fallen from the clouds. He started writing his own compositions that same year.
The next year, Franz met Ludwig von Beethoven for the first time, and according to one possibly apocryphal account, Beethoven was so charmed that he kissed him on the forehead.
1823 was also the year that Liszt moved to Paris. This move was another one that was made so that he could continue his studies with other musical masters. And while the Paris Conservatory declined to admit him on the grounds that he was not French, Czech composer Anton Recha and Italian composer Ferdinando Payer taught him privately. In addition to his studies, he put on extensive public performances, and he really started to develop quite a following.
However, in 1826, when he was 15 years old, Franz's father died suddenly of typhoid. His father had really been his primary source of support during all of this musical training and performing. Plus, the boy was only 15 years old. He had not always had good health up until this point, and this whole series of touring and studying had been really fatiguing. After his father's death, Franz had to share a one-bedroom apartment with his mother, and grieving and exhausted, he turned to teaching piano to try to make a living. He actually fell in love with one of his students, which is going to set a trend for his later life. When her father forced him to end their relationship, he became so ill that newspapers printed obituaries for him. Afterward, he retreated from public performance for almost 4 years, and he spent most of this time reading and teaching music.
He started to compose music again in 1830, following the July Revolution, in which King Charles X was overthrown and succeeded by Louis Philippe. In his mother's words, quote, the canons cured him. And afterward, he met several more famous names in the musical world, including Hector Berlioz, Niccolo Paganini, and Frédéric Chopin.
Liszt met the married Comtesse Marie d'Agoult in 1833, when he was 22 years old. In spite of her being married, he fell in love with her, and they were to be together for 12 years. They eventually had 3 children together. To avoid the scorn of Parisian society over this affair with a married woman, they left and spent the next 4 years traveling through Europe, including Switzerland, Italy, and other non-Paris parts of France. His travels and his love for her started to inspire him to compose, and he wrote a set of suites for solo piano, which became the highly praised Année de Pèlerinage.
Over the next few years, Liszt's reputation as a musician grew just dramatically. He gave tours and performances and really made a name for himself as a virtuoso composer and pianist, and as well as an extremely charismatic and very expressive performer.
He also became known for being quite generous with his music and his time. He often taught people and also accepted official posts for free. So he did all this without pay. And then he would donate the proceeds from his concerts to charity.
He also developed a different reputation thanks to his behavior off stage. James Huneker's 1911 biography in chapter 2, which is called Aspects of His Art and Character, begins Liszt and the Ladies.
It's like, this is like the heading. So it's like, one, Liszt and the Ladies.
The feminine friendships of Franz Liszt gained for him as much notoriety as his music making. To the average public, he was a compound of Casanova, Byron, and Goethe, and to this mixture could have been added the name of Stendhal. Liszt's love affairs, Liszt's children, Liszt's perilous escape from daggers, pistols, and poisons were the subjects of conversation in Europe 3/4 of a century ago, as earlier Byron was both hero and black sheep in the current gossip of his time.
Let's just add to the subjects of conversation right now that he was also extremely attractive. Like, I'm having trouble picking out which extremely attractive picture of Franz Liszt should accompany our blog post and our show notes and the episode itself, because there are many. And he looks like the boy at your high school who was very sensitive and soulful and wrote terrible poetry and made all of the girls think that he was just so tragically attractive. Like, that's what he looked like.
Yeah, he looks like every guy in every movie about teenage forlornness as well, that like, he's so beautiful no one will ever understand him.
Yep. I'm not kidding.
He is a pretty thing. I mean, he's very beautiful.
So basically, this all meant that Franz Liszt was a 19th century virtuoso piano rock star. And that's where this mania comes in, which we're going to talk about after a brief word from a sponsor.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, to understand this mania that erupted around Franz Liszt, let's start by talking about what he was like in concert. Here is a description written by Hans Christian Andersen, of all people. As Liszt sat before the piano, the first impression of his personality was derived from the appearance of strong passions in his wan face, so that he seemed to me a demon nailed fast to the instrument whence his tones streamed forth. They came from his blood, from his thoughts. He was a demon who would liberate his soul from the thraldom. He was on the rack. His blood flowed and his nerves trembled. But as he continued to play, so the demon vanished. I saw that pale face assume a nobler and brighter expression. The divine soul shone from his eyes, from every feature. He became as beauteous as only spirit and enthusiasm can make their worshipers.
Really, Liszt had been breaking new ground in his concert performances. It was not at this point common for just a man and a piano to have a whole stage to himself. But Liszt did basically invent this sort of recital as a performance format. And it definitely wasn't common for someone to play the piano like a demon turned divine. The whole performance was so enormously expressive and emotive, and the audience tended to really just get caught up in it.
On top of that, Liszt played with the piano in profile so that people could see his face while he played. And he would whip his kind of longish hair around as he was playing, which was very striking. He also played all of his music from memory, which a lot of other musicians of the day thought was extremely rude, especially when you were playing work that someone else had written, which could make people think that you had actually written it yourself.
On December 27th of 1841, Franz Liszt played the first concert in what would be a 10-week tour of Germany. And the audience was overcome. Women shrieked and swooned, and there was a general atmosphere of rapturous chaos. And from the men, jealousy.
It got weirder from there. People started wearing lockets and brooches that had his face on them, which is not that weird. I mean, it's not that much different from having a t-shirt with your favorite boy band face on it. Women, however, started carrying vials with them in case Franz Liszt walked away from some not quite empty cup of coffee, so they could like spirit away the unconsumed dregs of his coffee and then carry it around with them in that vial. People scavenged his old coffee grounds and cigar butts also. There's even one story of a lady-in-waiting having one of his discarded cigar butts encased in a locket that had his initials in jewels on the front.
I love it. I mean, that all makes perfect sense to me.
Do you remember when Angelina Jolie and Billy Bob Thornton were walking around with vials of one another's blood?
Yes.
It was like that.
I get it. Women would literally attack Liszt when this mania was going on. So they would tear off parts of his clothes, they would try to snip pieces of his hair, and they would fight one another for their spoils. He'd throw gloves and handkerchiefs into the audience after performances, and the scene would devolve into fisticuffs, sometimes with the articles that people were fighting over being torn to bits in the process.
His manner of playing the piano was also very prone to breaking strings, and women would scavenge those broken strings also and then make them into bracelets, which is one of the less weird parts of all of this.
I love that. I love a little crafty fandom. And yes, in case you're wondering, there are reports of women throwing their garments onto the stage, including their undergarments, although this is disputed as to whether or not it's fact or fancy.
So, although most of the listomania behavior is attributed to women, men definitely did get on the action, too. Some of them in their own excitement, and some of them in the form of fighting one another in fits of jealousy.
It was poet and journalist Heinrich Heine who coined the word Lisdomanie on April 25th, 1844, at which point Lisd had actually moved on to Paris. And at first, Heine actually thought this whole phenomenon was a result of social and legal expectations in Germany. It was culturally more reserved than Paris, with a more stringent law enforcement. So his supposition was that people were taking this opportunity to legally blow off steam where they could.
But then Franz Liszt came to Paris, where people were a lot freer. There was a lot more social wiggle room. The exact same thing happened. And he wrote quite a lot about it. We're not going to read all of it, but we are going to read kind of a lengthy bit of Heine's description, which goes, "Strange, thought I, these Parisians who have seen Napoleon, who had to win one battle after another to hold their attention. Now they are claiming our Franz Liszt. And what an acclaim it was, a veritable insanity, one unheard of in the annals of furor. What is the reason of this phenomenon? The solution of this question belongs to the domain of pathology rather than that of aesthetics. A physician whose specialty is female diseases and whom I asked to explain the magic our Liszt exerted upon his public smiled in the strangest manner and at the same time said all sorts of things about magnetism, galvanism, electricity, of the contagion of a close hall filled with countless wax lights and several hundred perfumed and perspiring human beings, of historical epilepsy, of the phenomenon of tickling, of musical cantharides, and other scabrous things, which, I believe, have reference to the mysteries of the Bona Dea. Perhaps the solution of the question is not buried in such adventurous depths, but floats on a very prosaic surface. It seems to me at times that all this sorcery may be explained by the fact that no one on earth knows so well how to organize his successes or raise their mise-en-scene as our Franz Liszt. In this art, he is a genius."
As we said at the top of the show, the medical establishment thought this was a contagious, dangerous physical syndrome that could actually be passed from one overwrought lady to another. They feared an epidemic. So basically, people have been pathologizing young women being really excited about music for almost 175 years. That wasn't new with the Beatles. It
nope.
was not new with any boy bands since then.
Nope.
All the way back to Franz Liszt.
Maybe even before. It's possible that there were similar stories in other cultures. All of the resources I had at my disposal were about, like, the Western musical tradition.
Yeah.
But who knows? So, actually, this whole thing kind of plagued Franz Liszt. Other musicians were absolutely appalled at the audience's behavior, including really famous names like Chopin and Schumann and Mendelssohn. A lot of people in the musical world really started to dislike Franz Liszt based on what they saw as this vulgar, needless hero worship that was undecorous and dangerous. And Liszt's own correspondence sounds vaguely baffled at this pattern. I mean, he was obviously doing some things to encourage it, like on purpose throwing gloves and handkerchiefs into the audience. But he really still didn't seem to quite fathom the extent of everybody's intensity.
But just like Beatlemania, Spice Girl Mania, and Bieber Fever, it eventually subsided. We're going to talk about that some more after we have a quick word from one of our fabulous sponsors.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So to get to the end of Lizdomania and the end of Franz Liszt's life. In 1847, Liszt met Princess Caroline Zuzan Wittgenstein, and he met her in Kiev, and they started a relationship. And she, like his previous long-term love affair, was married. The princess wanted him to stop touring and settle down and focus on teaching and composing instead. And so while he and the previous his previous love interest, the Comtesse, had needed to escape Paris and scandal. Instead, Liszt was installed in the princess's estates. His last paying concert was in September of that year, and he was 35.
At the age of 37, he accepted the permanent post of Kapellmeister, basically the person in charge of music, for the Grand Duke of Weimar. This position came with a royal benefactor, Carl Alexander, to be his patron. So he had the financial and social backing to just continue his own work. Liszt moved to Weimar, and the princess later joined him there.
In addition to his ongoing teaching and composition, Liszt started trying to create new musical forms. The most famous of these was the symphonic poem, which is a musical piece that's meant to evoke or illustrate a story or a piece of visual art. These compositions were really groundbreaking, and they attracted more music students who wanted to learn from him. He dedicated most of his music around this time to the Princess Caroline.
And while in Weimar, Liszt wrote what's considered to be his most accomplished symphonic work, Ein Faust Symphony, or Faust Symphony. This was essentially a series of interconnected symphonic poems based on Johann Wolfgang von Goethe's tragic play Faust. Goethe and Schiller had both lived in Weimar, and Liszt drew musical inspiration from their literary work.
His post as Kapellmeister also meant that Liszt was responsible for conducting the Weimar Orchestra, and in doing so, he really revolutionized what it meant to conduct. Up until that point, the conductor was basically a human metronome. He made sure that all of the orchestra played in time with one another and that nobody missed their cues. But Liszt added gestures and expressions and an emotive physical presence to guide what the orchestra should sound like in the shape of the playing itself. And this is pretty much taken for granted in the field of conducting an orchestra today. That's how it works.
At the end of the 1850s, life became more difficult for Liszt. He resigned his post in Weimar in 1859, and at that point, two of his children also died, one in that same year that he resigned, and then another a few years later in 1862.
He also got caught up in a musical feud known as the War of the Romantics, and this pitted the more romantically inclined musicians Liszt and Richard Wagner against the more conservative, classically inclined, traditionalist faction of Robert Schumann, Felix Mendelssohn, and Johannes Brahms. This was basically a dispute between the more avant-garde musical scene and the composers who drew their influence from past masters like Bach, Mozart, and Beethoven.
This association with Wagner also meant that Liszt developed a reputation for having anti-Semitic views, but there's significant dispute about whether quotations that were attributed to him in this area of thought were accurate or they were not.
Yeah, at this point, Wagner is kind of notoriously anti-Semitic in his views, but I had a hard time confirming exactly what Liszt's views were. So, as this whole musical schism was going on, Liszt moved to Rome, where the Princess Caroline had gone to try to get her previous marriage annulled by the Pope. She and Liszt hoped to get married, but her annulment did not go through, so they did not.
And at this point, Liszt turned away from a lot of the world. In 1863, he moved to an apartment at a monastery outside of Rome. And 2 years later, in 1865, he cut his hair in a tonsure. So that's the shaving of the middle part of the scalp that leaves a ring of hair around it. At this point, he took holy orders that same year, and he pursued an extensive study of theology with the hope of joining the clergy. And although he was never ordained, he did become an abbot, and he produced a number of religiously themed musical works.
In 1870, Liszt returned to Hungary to visit, and while he was away from Rome, Victor Emmanuel II attempted to unify all the Italian states and essentially laid siege to Rome. Since he couldn't return, Liszt remained in Hungary and accepted a post at the Royal National Hungarian Academy of Music in Budapest, and today this is the Franz Liszt Academy of Music.
For the last 15 years of his life, Liszt divided his time among Budapest, Weimar, and Rome. He continued to teach extensively and cultivated the idea of a master class, and that's an idea that's continued to be part of musical and other artistic education today. He taught these demonstration-based classes, he being the master, of course, for free.
He struggled with depression and failing health toward the end of his life, and he died in Germany on July 31st, 1886. By then, he had composed about 1,400 works.
Although he's pretty universally recognized as a virtuoso piano player, as well as for his contributions to the art of conducting and the idea of symphonic poems, there are still people that argue that his skill as a composer was all hype.
Yeah, that's... I found several articles that were like, Franz Liszt, was he really any good? I don't think so.
That's always the case with avant-garde folks, though, right? Like even
well,
after...
and it's also the case with excessively pretty soulful-looking people who acquire an overly excited base of fans that like to scream a lot.
Right. I mean, you could say that of any person in the arts or anything, really, where, like, if they have really rabid fans, there's always going to be a kickback of, like, no, they're not worth all of that. Even if they are super talented and amazing.
Right. People say that about the Beatles. And it's like there are plenty of arguments you can make about the Beatles and what their influences are and whether those influences should have gotten more attention and whether all of their work is really great. But really, seriously, you can't just dismiss the entirety of the Beatles because ladies were screaming about them.
Yeah.
So there also this whole phenomenon spawned a weird rock opera about Franz Liszt in the 1970s that was called Listomania. And there's also a song and album by the band Phoenix that became very popular much more recently. If you want to read all kinds of primary sources about Franz Liszt, the Library of Congress has a whole bunch of them. A bunch of them are on the web. It's pretty awesome.
Cool.
Thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday. If you have heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar over the course of today's episode, since it is from the archive, that might be out of date now. You can email us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com, and you can find us all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.